The Hoop Collective is brought to you by Goodyear. Celebrating March deal days with month-long service and savings, visit GoodyearAutoservice.com for offers. The brackets are out, and who doesn't love taking on their family and friends in the ESPN Tournament Challenge and beating every single one of them? Sign up now for ESPN Tournament Challenge at ESPN.com/bracket. And this year, you can boost your bracket with ESPN Plus. Use Bracket Predictor to analyze each matchup, get recommended picks one game at a time, and import your picks directly into ESPN's Tournament Challenge. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. And if you want the best insight and analysis on the NCAA tournament, check out Courtside with former Division I head coaches Dan Dockich and Seth Greenberg. Listen to Courtside wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Monday afternoon. Joining us from Los Angeles is Ramona Shelburne. What's up, Momo?
What's going on?
And I thought, Momo, this is a big show because for the first time we have joining us from her home in Maryland, ESPN analyst extraordinaire. She does college basketball. She's all over the NBA. She does ESPN radio. She does MSG stuff for the Knicks broadcast. Monica McNutt, am I forgetting something else that you'd also do?
Oh my gosh, Brian, that was such a gracious intro. No, you nailed it. That's all the important stuff. I have a dog too.
Former.
I have a dog too.
She played at Georgetown, so she's hype about the Hoyas making the tournament.
Yes, indeed. What a great weekend. I mean, honestly, guys, as basketball people in general, like, how dope was the moment that Big Pat, as I call him, because I actually went to school with Little Pat, wins a championship as a coach in the same place he won as a player, and Big John passed last year. Like, it was honestly poetic, even if you're not a Hoya.
I just have not been able to follow college basketball this year. It's just been too crazy. So I looked at the bracket. I have no idea what I'm looking at. But
you have just as good a chance of picking winners, Brian, as anybody.
I know enough to know that this year, I wish everybody good luck because I think it's going to be a complete mess. They used to have that thing. How much did Warren Buffett and Dan Gilbert, was it like $500 million or something if you picked a perfect bracket? Go ahead and make it $6 billion because no one's picking this bracket. No one. All right. So we talk about the NBA here, but Monica, good luck to your Hoyas later on this week.
Thank you.
So, Momo, last night, talking out in L.A. here, the game was in New Orleans. The Clippers got blasted. I looked. They are actually – and I know that the All-Star break, it came at a different time than last year. And, you know, the seasons are a little bit different. But just comparison to comparison, the Clippers were two games worse at the All-Star break this year over the same number of games. Whatever it was, they were actually two games behind their pace from last year when they got off to a weak start without Paul George and so many injuries. Actually, they were actually behind last year's pace. They come out of the All-Star break and get absolutely drubbed by the Pelicans. They give up 65% shooting to the Pelicans. And after the game, Kawhi Leonard, who doesn't usually say much, as we know, really, he used the word, he said it's very concerning about where they are. And I talked about their consistency being off. Look, I'm not going to sit here and freak out about a contender, you know, in March. But what's the level of concern on where the Clippers are in your mind? I mean, things are not going as to plan.
Yeah, I think, look, they've lost 5 out of 7 now. So this isn't just a little swoon. This is now continuing on for quite some time, even past the All-Star break. I mean, if you could say, if they went into the All-Star break, people understand, like, you lose momentum going into the break, and that happens. But I think, you know, some of this is, they lost one of their big energy guys, Montrezl Harrell, in the offseason, right? He plays for the Lakers now. Patrick Beverley's been out. He's had a little knee thing going on. He's the other energy guy. And Kawhi, what I thought Kawhi said that caught my eye is, like, it can't just be one guy that gives us energy. It can't just be, like, you know, Pat Bev does Pat Bev things, and that's what makes everybody else light a fire. This was very reminiscent of another game they had earlier this year where they just got waxed by Memphis, and it's like, it's a young team, comes out early, has a lot of energy, just kind of gets ahead of them quick. And instead of responding and, you know, stabilizing the game, responding, coming back, they just kind of fold. And that is concerning, especially for a guy like Kawhi. And I keep thinking about him in the championship year he had in Toronto, where, you know, he did the load management thing there too. But I forget what the record was, Brian. Wasn't it like 17-4 when he was out that year in Toronto?
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but that's
something along those lines. That was an indication to me that the rest of the team was ready to win. Like Kawhi was the guy that was going to put them over the top in the playoffs, but the rest of the team was mature, knew how to bring that kind of consistent energy every night. It's what we saw from the Lakers last year when they went on to win. That was what, in a lot of ways, sold me on it. Is they didn't lose, you know, 3 games in a row most of the year. I think it was all year. There might have been one stretch where they had it, but they were very consistent all year long, and they brought that energy every night. And you know, there's going to be games here or there, but 5 out of 7, like, you know, a couple of these games here already to young teams where you kind of question the energy level, not good.
Yeah, and by the way, Monica, they play the Mavericks tonight, and, you know, this podcast isn't being released till tomorrow, so for all we know, they'll beat the Mavericks tonight, but it's not going to change the up and down nature of this team that's got to, you know, this is built to win a championship. This is not a 4-year project. This is win now.
I guess I'd have to defer to you guys before I dive in on this, because I just feel like this year is so odd in so many ways. And yes, on the calendar, we are past the All-Star break. But I just, what have we played? How many games have we played to this point? I just wonder if under regular circumstances in a regular year, they're 25-15. Well, no, they've got a lot of games under their belt at this point. I just, I'm waiting. I kind of am still giving teams a little bit of grace to kind of rev it up as we make this push. I just think on any level of basketball, and we're focused on NBA here, the oddities of this year can't be taken for granted. And I think Kawhi saying something like that in the media is certainly signaling to the rest of his teammates. But I go back to those reports that we had in the offseason when it comes to this particular team, that maybe the chemistry issues still aren't necessarily solved. You mentioned Trez leaving, Ramona. I think about a guy like Landry Shamet, who wasn't necessarily a big-time scorer, but just younger, understood his role. Like, when you kind of comb through this roster, there's not a ton of youth, and I guess that could be a double-edged sword, and you're supposed to have guys that understand the rigmarole. But to your point about the young teams jumping up and get them, there's a certain urgency that I feel like younger guys are playing with, understanding that this is a team that's supposed to be a contender, whether that's fair or not.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Brian, last year, about this same, I think it was maybe late January, early February, they had a swoon like this too. And it was one of those moments that, you know, Om Young, Misuk, and I, when we were talking at the end of the year, we wrote a sort of a TikTok on what went wrong with the Clippers last year, right? And he brought this point up. There was a moment last year, a similar kind of dead period, as we were, you know, walking through the middle of the year, and they lost a few games. And Kawhi started having these film sessions in his room. They were out on the road, and he called Doc Rivers in, and he called Ty Lue in, and he called some of the team, you know, I don't think it was the whole team, but it was a group of guys, and they would watch film, and he called those meetings. And to me, it was, I don't think it was really reported at the time. We sort of found out about it later, but Kawhi doesn't get a lot of credit as a vocal leader or even a leader in general, right? And sort of he leads by example on the court, et cetera. But I do think that when he says things like this, and you've covered for his whole career, I've covered him. Like, when he says something like it's very concerning, those words are chosen carefully. Like, he did not just slip and say that. He didn't just say that because he was frustrated at the end of a game. This is on par to me with him calling film sessions in the middle of that road trip last year. To say essentially like, hey, we got to fix some stuff. We got to do some things. And like, for Kawhi to do that, one, shows a little bit of leadership that I don't think people talk about as much with him because he is so generally quiet and reserved. But also his level of his concern, because he came to LA with the Clippers to win. And Brian, as you know, we've talked about this before, like their window is not exactly all that wide open.
So the thing with them is this year, Kawhi hasn't load managed that much. He's played in back-to-backs. Paul George has made it a point. Paul and Kawhi have made it a point to really try to you know, get their chemistry going more to build good habits. And here they are having the same type of issues that they did a year ago with, frankly, less to blame it on because they have been more healthy. Although at the guard position, they've been dinged up again. You know, Pat Beverly, they're on a road trip right now. Pat Beverly, who's been dealing with knee issues for several years, is dealing with knee issues. And, you know, one thing I was talking to an executive who's been around a long time, and he was saying that, you know, Kawhi, the teams that Kawhi was on that won championships in San Antonio and in Toronto, you know, they had a really strong lead guard. And that he played off of that. And, you know, that's something that the Clippers just don't have. I know that Lou Williams at times functions in that role, but they don't, you know, and I mean, look, Tony Parker is a Hall of Famer. Kyle Lowry might be a Hall of Famer. I mean, I'd argue for him to be a Hall of Famer, around, you know, borderline in that case, but certainly a very strong lead guard. And they don't have it. And I'm not saying that having a lead, I mean, last night for the second time in, I think, 3 weeks, they gave up over 70 points in the paint, which a lead guard is not necessarily going to help you with that. I mean, that's the overall team issue. But, you know, not having a lead guard is continuing to be a problem. And guys, because I look at the trade market, it's going to be hard for them. You know, they actually have a almost a $4 million trade exception that they can use by Monday. And I was thinking, well, I wonder who they could get for that. And then I realized they're like 500 some odd thousand underneath the hard cap. They triggered the hard salary cap because they used their full mid-level. They didn't use the taxpayer mid-level. They used the full mid-level on Serge Ibaka in the offseason, which was an important signing for them. But once you do that, you can only spend to a certain amount. And they're like only within 500,000 of it or 600,000 of it. And so not only would they have to make a trade without having any first-round picks, or as Monica mentioned, they don't even really have that many young players that they can use you know, in a trade, because they don't even have him on their roster. One of there's probably their best young player is Luke Kennard, who has recently signed a huge contract, and that makes him hard to trade. But they don't have the draft picks. They don't have the young players, and they can't really do a trade where they take back too much more money. And so all of a sudden the funnel of players that you could get, because I really do think they need to figure out how to get a lead guard. And I know they've kicked around trying to figure out how to get Kyle Lowry, but that's just not going to happen, guys. They don't have the assets to trade for him, and he makes $30 million. You can't, you know, maybe you could assemble $24 million in pieces and try to send it, but then you're over the hard cap. You can't do it. So the only player that I can really see, unless there's a buyout that happens where there's all of a sudden a player that's free that, you know, could help him, but I don't see that right now. The only player that I could really see that they could maybe acquire is George Hill. But to do the – go ahead, Ramon.
They've been linked to him for a while now, but it's going to – I think you're right, Brian. I think it's going to be – you know, the buyout market is as we approach this trade deadline, I think that's going to be the most competitive market. And last year they got Reggie Jackson on that buyout market. Okay, so they can find guys.
They got to get a player. I mean, they got to get a player better than Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson's not getting it done.
Yeah, and look, I don't want to throw shade at Reggie Jackson. Okay, he's a good guy, but like that's what you get on the buyout market. Okay, like you get somebody who got bought out. Sometimes it works out well, but when you're talking about lead guard in the same breath as Tony Parker, Kyle Lowry, like these are big names, and you know Reggie Jackson can do a nice job as a backup. He started sometimes. But you're right. They don't really have a lot of flexibility there. What they could do, and this would be a pretty radical thing to do, they could do something with Lou Williams. I think he has some value. But then there's a sort of domino effect of that. If you trade Lou, who do you replace him with? That's going to be better. And you lose all that scoring. You lose all – I mean, he's kind of like your cheat code, right? When you need a basket,
I think that's who they'd have to trade for George Hill. And actually, that wouldn't even get it done. They'd have to trade Lou Williams and one of their minimum guys, or one of their low-level guys, maybe Kambale, who's a guy they drafted, to do that. And then you probably would have to add a second-round pick in there.
But I'm with Ramona. I feel like that begins to create more problems than it solves at that point.
That's the point, Monica. I don't see – like, a year ago, I was so on this team – I so felt like they were the team to do it. And like, boy, was I just wrong. And now I look at their roster and I just see this hole. And I, you know, not only do I see their focus and intensity issues, I see this hole at guard. And I don't know how they fix it. Because as you mentioned, that would hurt them to have to trade Lou.
So here's the big thing that I see from 10,000 feet. There were two teams that came into the 2019-2020 season in Los Angeles, picked as championship contenders. Each of them had a pretty gaping hole at point guard. One of those teams decided to make LeBron James a point guard. Right? Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that's kind of what the Clippers have tried to do with Kawhi. It's not really his thing, but he has taken on more of a playmaking role. It's not really his instinct or natural. Yeah, I mean, Monica, you'd probably be the best to analyze this in terms of the way he plays. But, he can do it, but it's not as natural to Kawhi to play in that sort of lead guard playmaking mm-hmm. role if it is for LeBron.
100%. But there's so many things that LeBron can do. But I'm with you, though, because now the question becomes, well, how do we solve this internally, right? And Pat Beverly obviously is the guard, kind of the energy guy, all that stuff. But I would even be hesitant to compare his skill set to the guys that we listed in Lowry and Parker, right? So then to me, it becomes a thing by committee. And I'm not sure what exactly Tyronn Lue has, cooked up for them big picture offensively. But I think back to that game versus the Jazz. And I know they split that season and that series in the regular season. But again, Pat Beverly played in that game. I thought they had tremendous defensive energy in that game. And so I just wonder if there's a scenario in which this team puts a little bit more energy into the defensive end and sees what can happen naturally on the other side. Because if you run that point guard spot sort of by committee, Kawhi does a little bit, PG does a little bit, and then make sure that your offense is moving, because those guys garner so much attention, you can get something out of that. I don't know that that's going to get you through the playoffs, but you can find a little bit more consistency than we've seen as of late.
I just don't know if that committee approach has worked for them, because they've been very poor in the clutch.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, I'm looking at this team a year and a half into this move here, and I'm concerned about it. And look, when they play their best, it doesn't matter. Of course, when Kawhi and Paul George are playing their best, and when, Serge is defending the rim and their ancillary players are hitting their outside shots. I mean, Marcus Morris, he started out the year injured. He's been up and down. He was a complete zero in last night's game against New Orleans. Of course, me saying that, tonight he might have 25 and 12. But, when their guys all play well, this is obviously a terrific team. But I've seen them when they don't deliver. And I've watched them in these close games. And we know that when they get in the playoffs, there's going to be a bunch of close games, that it's going to be defined by it. And I would be worried if I got to believe that when Kawhi says it's very concerning, I got to believe that Ty Lue feels that way. I got to believe their front office feels that way. I got to believe they're looking at this and they got to be on the same page with that. What they can do about it, they may not have any other choice than to do it from within. And
that's it. But I mean, but see, as much as we could talk trade this, trade that, to me, there's just a level of consistency on the energy level, right? Like, I don't know if, like you just said, Brian, like they have, when they're clicking, they're clicking. And I know that everybody doesn't click every single night, but I kind of interpret the commentary from Kawhi is a little bit more about consistent levels of energy. You know what I mean? And like, that is not necessarily an X and O thing. Now, sustainability is a whole nother issue. But just showing up every night, like putting your best foot forward?
So here's the big question. The Clippers had a couple of choices to make this offseason, the first of which they started a domino effect for both them and the Lakers, because they didn't really make any effort to re-sign Montrezl Harrell. And some of that is when we talk about the chemistry issues, et cetera, obviously that's been pretty well documented, that he and Paul George didn't necessarily mesh, and he was one of the old guard that didn't necessarily mesh with the new guard. And I think they also felt like Trez sort of blocked Marcus Morris, and it was hard for them to define a role for Marcus with Trez in that spot. And so they prioritized Marcus Morris. Okay. So if you get paid, what was it, 4 years, 64? I mean, if you get that money and they pick you over Trez, Marcus Morris thought of as a leader on this team. They also decided to use the full mid-level on Serge Ibaka, who has been inconsistent, I think is a nice way to put it. Physically, he left the game the other night with some lower back tightness. He's out for Monday night's game with that lower back tightness. If you look at his scoring averages and minutes, he's averaging about like 23 minutes a game. Last year in Toronto, he was about 27, 28. So he's down some minutes a game. That doesn't necessarily mean anything all that significant. Maybe the Clippers just decided he should be a 23-minute a game guy. But it also hints at some durability issues. You know, he's getting up there, and they've gave him a lot of money. They've got a nice. I think Nick Batum's been pretty good for them. Literally, that was a nice surprise that I don't think everybody saw coming. But he's been a nice addition. But they didn't prioritize that lead guard spot. I mean, Brian, how many times were you and I either on this podcast or on the Jump or on SportsCenter? How many times did we say, "Boy, the Clippers really need a lead guard"? I mean, it was just a big glaring hole heading into the offseason that they did not really address. And I think they made a choice to go elsewhere with their priorities.
Yeah, it is surprising that they've let it go this long. And it's gone so long that I don't know if it can be addressed. But I'll tell you one thing. I don't think Kawhi is going anywhere. I think he's got his championships. I think he's got his championships. I think he worked for a long time to get this set up in LA. But he did only sign a 2-year contract.
I'm glad you guys said it, because I was just about to ask that. Like, this, if it doesn't work, I mean, to me, Kawhi is like the best hired mercenary in the game.
I mean, I just can't see him walking on this situation.
Here's my thing, though, B-Dub. And you know, I mean, both of you guys have been far closer to him than I have. But if it's a chemistry thing, like, or if it's a effort thing, Kawhi doesn't strike me as the kind of guy to tolerate that. Like, no, I just don't see it.
Yeah, well,
let's look at the other teams that were in on the recruiting for Kawhi. Okay, Toronto obviously has he won a championship there. I think going into that situation, I don't think he was really thinking of staying, and I think they made it real hard on him. I mean, he was torn because he had such a good experience up in Toronto. They're about to start on a, I don't know, would you call it a rebuild? I don't know if I would go that far to say a rebuild.
Well, he's not going back there.
Not going back there.
Okay.
The Knicks were in on that, and they are looking quite interesting these days. Mm-hmm. The Lakers were down to the wire. And, Brian, help me out here, but do you ever believe that he was going to the Lakers? I never believed it.
Well,
even though I've heard all the – oh, he was just a, you know, few minutes away.
Yeah. It was a hell of a game of chicken.
It was a hell of a bluff, man. That, yeah. You know, whoever was bluff, whoever played those cards,
but you know what? Like,
poker player.
I don't want to spend too much time on it, but the Lakers, he's so damn good that the Lakers had to play the game. They owed it to themselves to play the game.
Yeah.
Even if they knew when they were playing the game, he's like, you know, this guy's not coming here. They had to do it.
Yeah.
So. I don't blame him.
Yeah, they had to do it. But if you look at options for Kawhi, who did he think about the last time? The Knicks didn't get a meeting, but they were offered one. Like, they didn't take the meeting because I think they knew they weren't going to get him. They were offered a meeting. So I don't know, just file that one away.
Well,
just,
look, you know, why not? I don't think he's going anywhere if he does take meetings this offseason. I think Miami and New York would be there, but I think it's premature to say that. I would just say that the Clippers are not where they need to be.
Agreed.
And that's getting more concerning by the week. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right, well, tonight, one of the big games of the league tonight, and we won't know the outcome, is Lakers-Warriors. Both teams have been scuffling a little bit. Both teams just got good wins. The Warriors beat the Jazz on Sunday, Steph's 33rd birthday. Did you see they made him the people at Chase Center made him a cake that looked like a bucket of popcorn?
No, but that's perfect because – I don't know. Stephen's popcorn is one of the fun stories in the NBA.
The Warriors put out a video where they showed how they made it. And they actually took real popcorn and like put it in the cake and on top of the cake. And I know that these cakes that are like, you're not actually supposed to eat them. You're just supposed to look at them. But who wants to eat popcorn on a cake? Anyway.
He really likes popcorn there.
He does.
It's like sitting for him in his locker postgame.
I know. This was back at the old place where we actually could go in and see. Didn't they actually like give him like the giant movie theater bags that are like 2 feet, 3 feet high?
Yeah, and he's always walking out with it too. Like they have it ready for him. But on the road, that's like somebody's job. Make sure Steph has his popcorn.
That's awesome.
Something interesting happened with the Warriors this week with James Wiseman. He missed couple of COVID tests during the break, and as a sort of disciplinary measure, not sort of, it was a disciplinary measure, Steve Kerr sat him for the first three quarters of their first game back, and it was an interesting little pinch point. Oops, that's okay. It was an interesting little pinch point because, you know, LaMelo is doing so great. We talked about LaMelo on our last podcast here. And Anthony Edwards has been doing really well. Wiseman was hurt earlier this year. I'm a big believer, Monica, in Wiseman. I love his – I think he's got tremendous footwork and athleticism for a guy that size. I really believe in his future. The Warriors really, really wanted this guy. Locked in on him. Were really focused on – getting their hands on him in the draft. I know that he tried to be politically correct with Minnesota, but he did not want to go there. He wanted to be a Warrior. The Warriors said no thank you to LaMelo, who I think would – can you think about LaMelo playing with Steph Curry right now? I mean, the way LaMelo delivers passes.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, his career will be defined in the future. It's not going to be defined right now. But when you – and he had 16 points last night, had a really good game. I am a big believer in James Wiseman. Monica, what do you think about the way that the Warriors have handled him this year and tried to bring him along, as he's a really important piece for them?
You know, I didn't love the three-quarter sit-down thing, but in general, I feel like he's – been baptized by fire, but he has, I mean, say what you want about Draymond, but I see him as a really great teammate and sort of and teacher. So I have not had a problem with how they've used him so far this year. I think that he's learning on the fly, and sometimes that's okay. I think we would all agree that this team has probably been better than, well, at least for me, I don't know about you guys. It's been better than I had initially anticipated, especially.
Oh yeah. I thought they were no way a playoff team.
Yeah. Like what's happening? And Steph is definitely back in that MVP conversation for sure. But you know, I'm glad you said it though, Brian, because the idea of comparing him to those other two, when he's going to actually have a shot, you know, to be in the playoffs. I mean, depending on what happens in the East, there's a world in which Charlotte does as well, especially with the new format. I can't remember who said it, but one of our analysts, our former pro guys, I don't know. I can't remember who said it, but they talked about the value of where guys spend their first few years in the league in terms of learning. Right. And so above all, the Warriors organization is respected. Steve Kerr is respected. You're running alongside a 2-time MVP, Draymond, who's going to be a guy who potentially could like finish with higher rebounds and assist numbers than he did points, which would be kind of crazy, but could happen. But you're in a system in which you're being taught how to play the game correctly. And these formative years to me are so huge. Like, I have no gripe with the way that the Warriors have been able to handle him. And I think that he's done a good job of navigating the curve. Like, I don't care how talented a rookie is outside of maybe LeBron. Like, and maybe Zion, but even Zion too. Like, there's going to be a curve, and I think he's done a yeoman's job with it.
Brian, you know, the there's been a lot of debate up in the Bay Area, you know, sports talk radio, et cetera, and even internally with the Warriors about how much they should prioritize the youth movement. That's James Wiseman, that's Jordan Poole, and Nico Mannion, who's the guard out of Arizona. That they played all three of those guys together in their win over the Jazz on Sunday, and they put them out there the kind of the same way the Jazz play their bench unit, the start of the second quarter, start of the fourth quarter. And these are just, I mean, these are young kids. They're like, you know, 19, 20, 21. And it's this strange year where on the one hand, they're trying to make the playoffs because the Warriors always want to make the playoffs. They don't really want to tank. That's a source of pride for them. But they also recognize, how old did you say Steph is?
33.
Right? Okay. Draymond, about, what is he, 30, 31, something like that? And they recognize that group, like, you have to sort of bring along the next generation the pillars of your franchise. At the same time, you're trying to catch the last wave of the Steph Curry prime, right? Now, I personally think Steph Curry's prime is going to last a little bit longer just because, you know, he's not dependent on the athleticism in the way some other players are, right? As long as he can shoot, I think he'll be making those when he's 50, okay? but as long as he can shoot, he's still going to be an effective player. So I think there is a source of I would definitely say organizational tension on the way that they've used Wiseman this year, because I think there are some people in the organization that really want them to put James Wiseman out there more, like, not necessarily with the benching and all that. That's a separate matter, but just putting him out there more, letting him play through mistakes, letting him play more minutes, heavier minutes, in the same way that those, you know, the other two rookies are playing, even though the Warriors are trying to contend for contend for the playoffs. But there is this sense of the faster you can get James Wiseman up to speed, the faster he can learn and grow from his mistakes within the system, with Draymond as his, you know, big brother, kind of out there mentoring him on the court, off the court, everything, the better the franchise is going to transition. And over the years, we've talked about the Warriors as sort of aspiring to be the Spurs. There was a lot of Spursian qualities to the Warriors dynasty, with Steph Curry playing the role of Tim Duncan, a franchise cornerstone. Everything flows from there. You can just kind of add great pieces around him, and everything seems to work because Steph makes things work. But the other hallmark of the Spurs culture and dynasty of making the playoffs 21 years in a row is just that they always reinvented themselves. They always brought up new young players, and it went from David Robinson to Tim Duncan to Tony Parker to Kawhi Leonard. I mean, they always had this succession plan, and they were very good at executing it. And I think that's what the Warriors are trying to do now. They really believe in James Wiseman. They really do. They think he is going to be a future All-Star. They think he is going to be a future pillar of the franchise. I checked. There was a storyline out there that, you know, LaMelo Ball thought they were going to pick him at 2. Everything I have been told is that that's a miscommunication or something was wrong there, because they were so high on James Wiseman.
As far as I know, they were laser focused.
They would have taken somebody, a very good source told me, they would have taken James Wiseman number one if they had the number one pick. He was highest on their board. They never wavered in that. If Minnesota would have taken Wiseman one, the Warriors would have taken Anthony Edwards 2. And I think some of the issue with Melo is, like, they really like Melo. They were really high on him. I don't know if they were as bullish on the fit with Steph Curry. And at the time, you remember, most of when they were seeing him, Klay Thompson was still okay. He got hurt a couple days before the draft. But they didn't even really get to see Melo in person alone. I think they had trouble arranging a private workout. And then when they did see him, the Hornets were actually there too. Mitch Kupchak was there. I don't know where that miscommunication came from, that LaMelo thought he was going to, because they were always focused on Wiseman.
Well, the drama there was Minnesota was trying to trade back out of one into – they wanted to flop spots with the Warriors because they wanted their pick back that they had out. And
Let's talk about that pick, right?
The story goes they were saber rattling that they were going to take Wiseman, because everybody knew the Warriors wanted Wiseman so bad, and they were sort of like posturing that, like, okay, Golden State, if you don't do a deal with us, we're taking Wiseman.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to do a deal to get him. And then our price is going to change. And there was, you know, a game of chicken there too. And the Warriors just were like, look, we'll make your pick and we'll react. And obviously a deal didn't get done. The way this is playing out, and we're going to talk about Anthony Edwards in a minute here, but the top three guys in this draft all have a lot of talent. All are in one way or another getting a lot of attention this year. And for a draft that was allegedly not that good, there's been a lot of intrigue coming out of these guys. And, there's going to be, by getting LaMelo Ball, the Hornets on the last podcast, we talked about it. The Hornets have made 13 consecutive lottery picks without getting a first team all rookie player.
Woo.
And this is a transformational pick for the Hornets. Woo. They haven't been able to make a pick like this in forever. For the Warriors, it was a vital pick as they pivot. And then if you look at the Wolves are arguably the worst team in the league. They've been impacted by injury and now suspension, but they are not in a good place. And not taking LaMelo, they ended up having to trade for Ricky Rubio. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute. But this is the way this all worked out was amazing, and the decisions that get made on draft night are incredible. The decision, for example, in the moment, the idea that think about how things are different just from the Luka Trae Young trade, how vital that was a couple of years ago. Then, the Warriors and the Wolves didn't do business on this thing, or that somebody else didn't trade up to number one to get LaMelo. Because it was widely available to the Wolves from the Wolves.
Yeah. Well, look, let's, I mean, there's the one team right now that I keep coming back to of, man, this team should have pulled the trigger on this. Okay. The Boston Celtics absolutely should have found a way to go and get LaMelo Ball. I mean, how different would that team look right now if they had LaMelo?
Well, it would have probably cost them Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum. So
you think that much?
I mean, I wouldn't have traded the number three pick without getting one of those guys.
Wow.
So
that is a lot. Well, we say that now. At the time, there were a lot of questions about LaMelo.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that too, Ramona, because like we can't do – it's not revisionist history.
Yeah.
He's having a great year, but there I remember some character stuff floating around. Now, whether you subscribe to that or not, like, and we still hadn't necessarily seen how his game was going to translate. For me, he's exceeded expectations. But just really quickly, back on the whole Warriors thing, the organizational tension, I love that phrase that you coined. I just feel like this is becoming now, for that organization and those fans, almost an embarrassment of riches. Like, they are fine. And, like, James Wiseman is coming along just fine. I literally was having a conversation about RJ Barrett earlier today for some MSG stuff. And the jump from year one to year two, like, if that's where he makes his significant jump, then that's okay too. Like, he's going to be in position to help move the organization along. They need to take a deep breath.
Yeah, and it's interesting how they bring Wiseman along, because this is, they grew Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. They found those guys in the draft and they grew and developed them. And they have shown that they can do that, but it was a different coaching staff that did the first years of Steph, Klay, and Draymond. This is now Steve Kerr and his coaching staff's ability to develop him, but it's a different developmental situation. Back when Mark Jackson was in charge and running the franchise, they didn't have the championship pedigree surrounding those guys. They had to sort of build that from within, and then Steve Kerr took them all the rest of the way, right? He took them, from good young players who needed to get over the hump to champions. And so it's interesting to grow champion players, young players within a championship culture, within, around guys like Draymond and Steph. And and when I say organizational tension, this is not to suggest that, Steve Kerr is in any kind of trouble or Bob Meyer. No. This is literally just a really talented young player that they are going to be very patient with, but they got to grow them the right way. And it's going to be fun to watch unfold. I mean, the Steph Curry yelling at people on the bench. And Brian, when's the last time you saw Steph Curry yell like that?
I mean, I'm sure it's happened, but I don't remember it.
Yeah, I mean, that was something. I mean, I've seen Draymond yell. I've seen Steve Kerr break a clipboard. Okay, but I've never seen Steph do that. I mean, you know, maybe they didn't have popcorn that night, you know, but that was intense. And I think what's fun for the Warriors, and it's fun for us who covered the dynasty years, is to see a dynasty reinvent itself and see if they can sustain the way the Spurs have, or the way they reconfigure. Because that Minnesota pick, Ryan, it is, I would say that's the most valuable asset in the league. Just when you talk about, you know, a team that owns another team's pick. This year it's top three protected, but after this, which by the way, very well could fall in the top three, like Minnesota could keep its pick. But if it goes to four or five, the Warriors get that pick this year. And this is a really good draft. The top five players in this draft are really good. If they don't get it this year, the following year, it is completely unprotected.
Wow.
So there's been some rumblings about, you know, and some people that I've talked to about the Warriors being active on the trade market.
Mm-hmm.
Momo, have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing they have to decide is whether or not they're going to keep Kelly Oubre. He started off the year slow. He has had a really nice resurgence. He's, you know, I forget his stats off the top of my head, but he really got his shooting stroke together. He's been a nice player for them in the last couple of months. But he's a free agent, and he's probably going to get offers. And so the question for the Warriors is, do you want to pay the gigantic luxury tax bill to keep Kelly Oubre on your roster the rest of this year? Or do you want to get what you can get for him now? Because no, the Warriors would have an opportunity to assign and trade with him so that, that, you know, they don't – Warriors, their philosophy in doing deals is we do not lose players for nothing. And sometimes that has helped them. I would say the Kevin Durant, you know, you were going to lose him for nothing. They end up parlaying that into D'Angelo Russell, who then becomes Andrew Wiggins plus the Minnesota pick, okay? So I would say that's a pretty good haul for instead of losing Kevin Durant for nothing. The Andre Iguodala trade – not as much. Hasn't worked out as well. Mm-hmm. But I think their general way of operating in Golden State has been, we do not lose assets for nothing. We do not lose players for nothing. And that is the question. The only question is when. If they, you know, I think they could keep Oubre, but I feel like he would get more offers elsewhere, and they probably don't want to pay that much for him going forward. So do you trade him now, or do you trade him in the offseason, or do you assign a trade?
Well, Steph didn't look like a guy who wanted to go quietly into the lottery night. he looked like he wants to play.
All right, Dylan Thomas. All right. Okay.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. We talked a little bit ago about Anthony Edwards, who had the best game of his rookie season on Sunday, scored 34 points. By the way, after starting 0-5 or 0-6, Chris Finch has got the Wolves a couple of wins in their last three games. Edwards took a blow in that game from Enes Kanter, then was able to come back and lead them. I think he scored like 12 or 14 points in the last 7 minutes. He's had a couple of incredible moments. His athleticism is off the charts. He's had a couple of crazy dunks. He had another one last night down the lane. He's sort of a typical rookie in that his efficiency has been not great. He's shot under 40% from the field, under 30% from three. He's had some nights where he's just had really bad shooting numbers. Right now, where D'Angelo Russell is out after, I think he's got a knee injury. I think he had a surgery, but maybe it was a procedure. And Malik Beasley is serving a long suspension. They don't have, they need him to score. They're not a very good team. They're like 8-30 or something. So he may be taking on a more of a volume scoring than he should. But last night, something interesting happened in this game. So he's great. He has 34 points. They win, come back. Dame had a great game. The Blazers are shorthanded right now too. But they come back and make a real nice win. Any win for the Wolves is very nice. And then after the game, Karl Towns, and I think this is important. He brings this up unprompted. It wasn't like somebody asked him about this. Karl, and I'll say this about Karl, he's very media savvy. Okay, he knows what's going on out there. He said everyone's trying to find a way to show they're better than Anthony Edwards because he was taken number one. I can't tell you how loaded of a statement I'm about to read from Karl Towns was. Let me say that it was also the right decision for us in this organization. I want to make that very clear. And I think what Karl is saying here, I think he's reacting to the fact that LaMelo is getting a lot of love right now. And people are like, why the hell didn't you take LaMelo? Number one, he's patting his rookie, his guy. He's giving him a pat on the back saying, you're doing great, kid. It was important. It was the right decision for us in this organization. It was the right decision because taking Wiseman would have been his position and would have forced him probably out of position in one way or another. And his close friend, D'Angelo Russell, or at least his friend, I don't know how close they are, but they're friends. It's clear. D'Angelo Russell was brought in. They made the huge trade for him. He was their point guard. He didn't want any confusion there. So they took the other wing. They took the wing, not the point guard and not the big man. And look, you could argue that in the modern NBA, having wings is the hardest thing to get. You get a super athletic wing like that and you're looking to break the tie, it's fine. But Karl Towns is saying that and he's trying to be savvy. And basically he's saying, look, we had me and this is my interpretation. He's saying we had me and D'Angelo, we needed a wing. We didn't need someone to play our position. And Monica, I wonder, I think Carl's reacting a little bit to what's going on out there. And I wonder if he's ultimately going to be right because Edwards is an exciting player, but he hasn't been LaMelo.
Ultimately, he's right now, B-Dub. I don't understand what we're doing. And I remember all the draft lead-up shows and whatever. And obviously, I don't have the intel that you guys have. But literally, roster by roster, Edwards was the right decision for the Minnesota Timberwolves, bar none, right? Especially as you guys just so eloquently pointed out how high the Warriors were on Wiseman. I get it. LaMelo Ball is surprising right now. We now see a very bright future for him. It's great. But in terms of what each team needs, it's irrelevant if LaMelo Ball went to Minnesota and had to sit behind Russell, knock on wood that maybe he did or didn't get hurt. But I don't know what we're doing. If anything, I applaud Kat for this in terms of patting his guy on his back. But to me, if you pay attention to rosters and just what teams need, this is not even a conversation. I mean, if we're going to go, so-and-so turned out to be great, you could apply that to any draft ever. That's a waste of breath for me.
The question is, are Karl Towns and D'Angelo Russell good enough that you're accommodating them in this way? Now, look, at the outset of it, maybe they just evaluated Edwards as a better player because two teams passed on LaMelo. Just point,
Well, and the thing is, we're going to be debating this LaMelo pick for a long time, and as Monica points out, let's have a conversation again in 1 year, in 2 years, in 3 years, because things look different in a few years. Once, especially with big guys in the NBA, it takes a little while sometimes for them to find their footing. So I think you should give James Wiseman a little bit longer run here before we start making big pronouncements. And,
for sure.
and as good as LaMelo is, like, I don't know. Is this as good as he's going to be? Like, is he going to keep growing? Is he going to keep developing? I mean, look, you know, what was the stat Ohm posted on the other day from about Lonzo Ball? Like, we looked at Lonzo after a couple of seasons and said, can't shoot. He just can't make threes, can't shoot. Guy's having a great year shooting. Like, he's hit all everything you want to say about Lonzo, his older brother, and all the weaknesses in his game the first couple of years in the league. He's done a pretty good job of addressing that. I mean, he's making threes this year at a clip where, you know, you could cynically look at that and say that's what happens when you're about to go into a contract year. sure, but he was also played 1 year of college and he had a funky shot. And so sometimes it takes time to adjust to the NBA and get confident in making that shot. And he had all the very strange transition year, right? The 1 year where he was like, it was Lonzo and Kuzma, and they were running the Lakers. And the next year, LeBron got there, and that was a little bit of an adjustment. And then he gets traded. I mean, there was, you know, this was a strange first couple of years in the league. So let's give that time before we say who the best player of those three were. But Brian, you're right. Like this, we didn't think this was that good of a draft, but I think there's several rookies this year that have come out and been very impressive, and that's even more impressive considering how little scouting teams were able to do, and how little the NCAA tournament wasn't played last year, so we didn't really get to see players under pressure. So I think, you know, it's been a relatively good draft considering how bad we thought it was last year.
I add to that though, real quick, Momo. Like Anthony Edwards. I don't know. Did Georgia make the field last year anyway? Wiseman was out. We wouldn't have seen Ball anyway. But the other point in terms of positions, which I think is really savvy that you just made, as these guys progress. Like, Ball is at the position to me that is going to see more defensive heat and, like, scouting and a little bit. So, like, I'm not going to call this lightning in the bottle. I think the kid can have a fantastic NBA career, but this is going to continue to shift. You know what I mean? Like, and for me, Edwards at a position to play off of Russell, Cat. That team is struggling right now, but we can't be prisoners of the moment when we have this conversation. That's just not fair to anybody.
I agree. I just think it's so interesting that the Cat is so attuned to it. And
well, he's got to be thinking about his own future there too. I mean, there's a sense of, you know, has he really given this pairing with D'Angelo Russell enough time or to really see what it's going to be? Because they've both been hurt. They both have had
no way. I mean, they've barely played together.
Yeah, and they've had a coaching change in the middle of it. I really think Chris Finch is going to be good for Cat. He's, you know, that was what he started. When Jokic started at Denver, Chris Finch was there. Like, he's good at running an offense around big men, and I think utilizing Cat in a way that Ryan Saunders probably didn't necessarily. I think you need to run the offense for Cat, and they didn't do that before. And I think we're just now starting to see what it's going to look like when he plays a focal point, because he's a really good passer. And I think we've all forgot about him. I mean, remember just a few years ago, Brian, we were talking about if you were to start a franchise with one young player, who would it be? Most people's answer was Karl Anthony Towns. And because of injuries, because of how bad Minnesota's been, because of, you know, the instability that we've seen there, you wouldn't give that answer anymore. I think we'd all say Luka Doncic. But Cat's still a really good player. And I think just passing-wise, vision-wise, ability to create, like, he needed a coach who can unlock some of that. And Chris Finch is just getting started with that.
Well, Anthony Edwards was asked about this last night, and he's very confident, and he does great interviews. And he said,
"Yeah,
I mean, they took me. It's over."
Wait, there's more to that quote. There's more. Anybody who's still talking about that can go kick rocks.
Agreed. 100% agreed.
And that was awesome.
Like, we're having this whole conversation and went through Golden State. But to your point about what has happened to Cat, like, this is why Warriors fans absolutely should relax. Like, you've got a rookie in a great system and a team that is very, very, very rarely irrelevant. But, like, what are we doing, people? Like, Anthony Edwards is going to be fine. That was the right pick for that organization. And all three of these guys have high ceilings. Like, it just sit back and enjoy. Like, just enjoy it. Chill out.
It's never over. It's never over. Otherwise, we wouldn't have this podcast.
Well, and they better keep that pick, Brian. They better keep that pick. If you're a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, you better be hoping that you get that top three pick this week. This year,
you got that,
like,
right.
That lottery, if that lottery, even if they have the worst record in the league, and they're going to have some competition from Cleveland this year. But They're the worst record in the league. There's still a 60% chance that that pick is not top three and goes to the Warriors this year. That would just be brutal as part of their as part of their rebuild here.
Okay, thank you so much to Monica. We really appreciate you joining us for the first time. We'll definitely have you back. Thank you to Ramona. Thank you to Anthony, our producer. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. We will talk to you later.
Quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/hoop now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/hoop.